Congratulations, you have just found the number one over 50 health and wellness podcast on the planet. In today's episode of the Over 50 Health and Wellness Show, we dive into a topic that's sparking a lot of curiosity and conversation among our listeners, and that's the unique challenges and strategies for those of us who identify as hard gainers. These are individuals over 50 who find it particularly tough to put on weight or muscle despite their best efforts. This is a subject that's very close to my heart personally, and it's especially relevant for our audience who are eager to transform their bodies and health in the second half of their lives. We're going to explore the myths, the science, and some personal stories behind being a hard gainer. And here's the best part. I'm joined today by an amazing co-host, none other than Silver Edge Super Coach Russell Medeiros. So if you're struggling to see the gains you desire, or if you're just curious about how to optimize your fitness journey after 50, this episode is packed with valuable information and motivation tailored just for you. Are you over 50 and sick and tired of the weight loss, weight gain roller coaster ride? Are you fed up with wacky workout routines and crazy cardio bouts? If the diets and workouts you've tried in the past have failed at building and maintaining a lean, strong, healthy body that you love, and you're ready to make a permanent change from a fat storer to a fat burning machine, then you might just be a perfect candidate for our 6-month one-on-one coaching service. Want to learn more? Head over to silveredgefitness.com and click on the coaching tab at the top of the page, or just shoot me an email at coach@silveredgefitness.com. Your future self will thank you. Coach Russell, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, man. Good morning.
Morning.
So let's kick this off. Today we're going to have some fun. I want to talk to you about a subject near and dear to my heart, and it's something that I've gotten a few questions about recently, so I thought we'd address it here in a podcast episode, and that's hard gainers. But before we get there, let's just back up here a little bit. Tell me, what's new with you? What's going on since we last spoke?
Just life struggles. That's about it.
I can relate to that. Yeah.
It's funny. You know how things go well for a while, then all of a sudden the rug gets pulled out under you, told I have to move.
Right.
They're selling the house I'm in, and my kids love their neighborhood, and the stress just immediately pops in. And instead of letting it take over and going to the Oreos, I just took a walk, and what do you know? 3 houses over, they're renting that one.
Yeah, no kidding.
I never saw that sign before until today. And so my week of stress with kids being out of school and that all going on, once you calm down and take a walk, things
back into perspective, huh?
We're back in the normal swing of things now.
Right on. Well, you mentioned going to the Oreos. Is that your go-to?
We have a lot of Oreos here.
You have a lot of Oreos there. Yeah.
Well, kids,
there's
like
part
the
of the
Oreos.
Problem right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you still have young ones in the house. So,
yeah. Getting rid of the kids, that would help me out.
Yeah. Yeah. But so my go-to when I'm kind of stressed or just bored, basically, if I'm going to stand and mindlessly snack in the pantry, it's going to be potato chips. That's my weakness. Yeah. And not any of the fancy ones either. Just the plain, salted, plain, no flavor. I don't want the cheese or barbecue or sour cream. None of that crap. I just want the plain, salty potato chips.
That's
good
funny.
Old-fashioned ones. Yeah, I can smash those things.
It's hard to stop with those, too.
It is hard to stop. Well, they are, in fact, scientifically engineered to be hard to stop. Is it Lay's? Their tagline is, bet you can't eat just one, right?
Yeah. Funny story. Years and years before I got really into nutrition, one day I ate like half a box. You know, remember the Nilla wafers?
Oh, yeah. 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 You make banana pudding with Nilla wafers,
yeah,
of course.
They're air, right? They're air.
Yeah,
they don't have any
calories. In those. Yeah. Right?
So I must have ate half a box. And then when I finally realized how to count calories and whatnot, I was like, I could have just went to In-N-Out.
Yeah.
And a burger and fries. I would have been well better off.
Sure.
All right. The Nilla wafers I ate.
Nilla wafers. Yeah, that's just basically, what is that? Flour and sugar? Butter? Or probably not butter even. It's probably some other shortening type thing.
Some scientific thing.
Yeah. Not good.
Not good.
Hey, man, I got to tell you a story here. So here, you probably know, I'm on a little tiny farm. So My dad had like 20 acres out here in the country, just off the coast of southern North Carolina, out here in Bolivia, North Carolina. And we originally bought this place. We lived at the beach. So we lived in Carolina Beach. And we bought this place a few years back. It had this little tiny 100-year-old house on it. And it was for us to just like have fun weekends. We'd come out, we'd visit with my dad, we'd hang out. We could stay the night in we could play farmer, come out here to the country a little bit. And over time, this is now our permanent home. In fact, we ended up Airbnb-ing our place at the beach, and we finally just sold that completely. So we live here full time now. And I tell you what, I've got these chickens, right? So I think there's like 15, 16 of my hens, and I got one mean rooster. So I am well stocked with farm fresh eggs every day. And I love my chickens. And the funny thing is, last year, the snakes found my chickens. Not so much the chickens, but they found the eggs. So these, you got to imagine a snake that's big enough because they swallow an egg whole. That's how they eat an egg. And I was catching these snakes in my chicken coop. And if you've ever caught a snake before, you got to be kind of, you got to sneak up on them and then grab them right behind their head so they can't bite you. Now, here where I live, there are poisonous snakes. I've seen lots of water moccasins. I've seen a few copperheads, and I've never seen, but there are apparently rattlesnakes here as well. Knock on wood, so far, these have only been non-venomous snakes. So I've got garter snakes, which they don't get very big, but the rat snakes and the king snakes get freaking huge, man. And I actually went last year, because I had so many freaking snakes in my chicken coop, I went and got a professional snake catcher. So, have you ever seen those big, it's like a big, like a thing you pick up trash on the road with. It's got a squeeze handle like that, and it's got a little jaw that's meant to grab them right behind their head. I had to use it for the first time this year. The snakes are already there. I was getting eggs out of my hen house the other day, and they've got these little egg boxes, these little nests, right? These little, that they're supposed to lay their eggs in, and most of the time, that's where they lay their eggs. But there's one corner of the coop that they just love to, for whatever reason, they just love to lay eggs there. And they're like four eggs there. I'm like, oh, sweet. And I'm bending down and picking them up. And there's this, in my peripheral vision, there's this little motion next to my hand. Sure enough, there's a big old garter snake right there, nestled up right next to my eggs. I'm like, you son of a. So I grabbed my snake catcher and got him out. First snake this year. So I'm too kind. I relocate them, meaning I walk over basically. My neighbor's not listening to this podcast, I don't think, but I walk over to his neighbor, over onto his property, and I chuck those snakes over there. I'm like, get out of here. But that's the first of probably many snakes I'm going to go to battle with here this summer.
I'm glad you got the catcher. We don't want to lose you for...
Yeah, right. Yeah, the snake catcher's the way to go. Well, my wife one day out in the garden last year was convinced she heard a rattlesnake. She came running in. There's a rattlesnake. There's a rattlesnake. I grabbed my shotgun. I went running. Where is he? Where is he? She goes, well, I didn't see him. I heard him. I said, okay, where'd you hear him? Where'd you hear him? And we were all really quiet. We're listening. We never did hear him. So I don't know if she really heard a giant rattlesnake or what the commotion was. But we have lots of, never a dull moment out here, I guess.
No, never. That's awesome. I've heard a lot of people moving toward farm type of style of living, especially people out here in the city.
I am really, really surprised. I love the beach. Been a surfer all of my adult life, most of my adolescent life as well. A huge fisherman. At times I've owned, this is the first time in 20 something years I haven't owned a boat, but I've had many different fishing boats. I just feel a deep connection to the sea. And I really thought it'd be fun to be out here next to my dad and be out here in the country a little bit. I was raised on a big farm as a kid, but I'm really surprised at how much I love it out here and how much I really don't miss. I don't miss the beach as much as thought I would. For one, it's beautiful in the summertime, but I've watched my little beach, Carolina Beach in particular, in North Carolina, just go from being in the 80s, this very sleepy little beach town, to now something much, much different. And it's overrun in the summer by tourists and just a whole different scene, right? But I think something probably shifted during COVID, really, and just this idea of being back on the land, having some self-reliance. We're on a well, right? So I've got water no matter what. I've now got, I think, 11 or 12 big old garden beds, raised garden beds. So I'm going full scale on on the gardening here. I've got my chickens, so I've got compost from them. My dad and stepmom across the street, I've got llamas, so I got lots of llama beans, which, if you don't know, llama beans are pure garden gold when it comes to compost. So I got a lifetime supply of that. So we're hitting the permaculture hard out here.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah, man. So if you're starting up, anybody, there's a tip for you folks out there that are gardeners. If you know anybody that's got a llama farm, and you got access to some llama beans, llama manure, that's the way to go, man.
I don't think we have any out here.
they're not indigenous to where I am either. Yeah. Well, hey, man, I got to ask you here. By the time this airs, this will probably be old news, but have you been following it all? All this craziness with Andrew Huberman in the news here lately.
I know who he is, but really not following.
Yeah. All right. So for folks that don't know, I mean, Andrew Huberman, he's a neuroscientist, right? So brilliant, brilliant dude. He's got the Andrew Huberman podcast. I think it's the Huberman Lab podcast is what it's called. He's got 6 million Instagram followers, probably that many on YouTube as well. Really, really sharp dude. Wildly, massively popular podcast. But at any rate, we're recording this. What is this? It's Friday, March 29th. This will be a couple of weeks before this comes out. But the New York Magazine just did a big, and when I say big, I mean long-ass article on Andrew Huberman. And the only reason I know that is because it's all over social media. It's like, oh, Huberman is, you know, he's this. It's basically kind of a smear piece, I guess. I mean, it's really, really bizarre. Mm. So basically the gist of the article, by the way, I found the New York Magazine article. I tried to read it, and about 20 minutes in, I was like, man, I can't read anymore. This is like, it's like a novel. It's a really, really, really long article. But the gist of it is this. It's written by this lady, and it is written in this way that kind of, it's trying to cast him in a bad light. And to me, this is just cancel culture at its worst. So the gist of it for folks that don't know and haven't seen this, or maybe you've read the headlines and you're thinking, oh, that guy's a real asshole. The gist of it is this. He's a single dude, as far as I can tell. And I think he was dating like 5 women at once. And so that's the whole, you know, everybody thinks Andrew Huberman's this wonderful guy, but he's really this devious, manipulative womanizer or something. And it goes on. I mean, it's really, really odd because you would think by the headlines that there's this revelation that, hey, this Huberman guy, he's not all he's cracked up to be. Well, it's not like he's a monk or a preacher that's taken a vow of celibacy and has been caught out. I mean, he's a wildly popular, single, good-looking, very intelligent man. And if he's dating 5-6 ladies at once, I guess that's kind of his prerogative is. I mean, it'd be kind of shitty if each one thought they were in an exclusive relationship with him. But at any rate, there's other odd pieces in the article that goes on to say, well, he's been known to have flaky behavior. Sometimes he says he's going to show up for things and doesn't. And you're like, well, wait, I think everybody on the face of this earth has, you know, I did that last week, right? You know,
I'm supposed to go to so many parties that I've never been to.
Sure, I'll be there. You know, I've got intentions to be there. But anyway, it was just this really weird, I don't know how to describe it. It seems to me as if, because there's the narrative is this one lady who was in a relationship with him, who they don't name, by the way. They say this is not her real name. So Sarah, I think that's what they call her in the article. And it's all about Sarah's side of the story, right? Well, he was controlling and manipulative. And then later I found out he was seeing some other people. And it was just this very odd article, and it seems almost as if this Sarah lady, this unnamed lady, was best friends. Her BFF was the author of this article, and her BFF said, "Hey, don't worry, I'll write an article for you in the New Yorker, and we'll get this guy. We'll get this Andrew Huberman guy." But really weird. More on that kind of, I feel like, the cancel culture kind of side of things. If you're a Huberman fan, here's my take on it. If you're a Huberman fan, you dig his podcast, you like following him on social media. Having read 3/4 of that article, just because I couldn't stomach anymore, it was so boring and repetitive and frankly long, I just couldn't make it all the way to the end. Maybe there was a bombshell revelation in the last paragraph and I just didn't get that far. But from what I could read, I mean, I don't know. The dude doesn't take anything away from his brilliance. And go ahead.
It's not like he's giving relationship.
It's not like he.
It'd be one thing if he. It's one thing if he said, you know, marriage is the holy, you know,
right,
and this is
right.
The, you know, and it's funny how we do it with our athletes too. You know, we use them as role models.
Right.
They're a good basketball player. They might be a horrible human being.
Correct.
You're a great basketball player, right? So it's just funny how we try to interweave all this stuff.
Yeah, into, it is.
Yeah, I don't care what he does at home. Like,
in his personal life.
I'm not going to him for that.
And look, if anybody were to dig deep enough into my background, they could find all kinds of crap. I'm sure you could go find some of my exes. I mean, that would be a long, long time ago, but some of them might not have some such flattering things to say about me, right? I mean, it's just really, really odd. And I saw these headlines of claims against his credibility, and it's just weird. But at any rate, for me, I find this cutting edge neuroscience stuff to be incredibly fascinating, but I don't find it to be particularly, a lot of it to be particularly practical, right? So I dig Huberman, and when he has a subject on that I like, I will listen. The dude's brilliant. He communicates really, really well. He doesn't talk down to people. He talks as peers. He's an excellent communicator, great podcast. But a lot of it's just like, I mean, he gets into the weeds. Remember you and I were talking a few weeks ago about the boulders and the big rocks and little rocks and the pebbles. I mean, this dude is, you know, he's a neuroscientist. He's into all these studies about, you know, well, this, if we do this and this and this, and we'll get a 5% increase in this. And he spends a lot of time down there in the weeds. And I think that for somebody who maybe doesn't have their diet dialed in, if you're still eating a lot of processed foods, or if you're not working out or walking or hydrating or getting 8 hours of sleep, maybe some of that advanced neuroscience stuff isn't as applicable, but it sure is fun. That's my take on that.
And take bits and pieces from it, too.
Take bits and pieces, and apply what,
you know,
apply what works.
Everything out.
But he's a big jack dude. Oh, and by the other thing I learned about Andrew Huberman just reading the article is he is 48, so he's only 2 years away from being a silver edger himself.
Yeah, be a client.
He can be a client. Dude's pretty big and jacked. I don't know, man. I'm not sure what I could teach him. Yeah. I'd love to program for him, though. All righty. Speaking of big and jacked, what I wanted to talk today about is heart gainers. And I guess before we start our conversation here talking about heart gainers, we should, I guess, define for folks that maybe aren't familiar with that term what a heart gainer is. And I'll start, and then, Russell, I'll just ask for you to add any commentary here. But basically, a heart gainer is a person, a man or a woman. It's often referred to as men, but I've known women that fall into this category. They find it hard to put on size. They find it hard to gain weight. They find it hard specifically to build muscle. So, Russell, you've been coaching for a long time. Have you worked with heart gainers or people that would fall into this category?
Yeah. So I'll add on to your explanation.
Sure.
For those of us who look at food and gain weight,
right?
The heart gainer is the annoying person that eats everything and doesn't put on any weight. That's for us folks. But yes, I have. It's surprising. Sometimes they're harder than the weight loss people.
Yeah,
just
I agree.
Because of the amount of food you have to eat.
Right. Yeah. Well, so you bring up a good point. When we a lot of times when we talk about heart gainers, because look, 70% of our population now is either overweight or obese. And these people are rolling their eyes, probably in disgust, when they think about somebody like me. I identify personally as a heart gainer, as somebody who has a hard time gaining weight. They're like, what the? Are you kidding me? Your problem is you have a hard time gaining weight? I don't want to hear that. But I do think that this is an interesting conversation to have because there's a couple of reasons. One is heart gainers kind of a real thing. And the other is that we have this, I think we have this epidemic of skinny fat people right now. And some of them fall into this category. Some of them maybe identify as kind of heart gainers. Most of them probably just are in that skinny fat condition just because of lifestyle, right? And less, you know, we think of a heart gainer, we think about somebody who's actively trying to put on muscle and struggling to do that, as opposed to most of our skinny fat. So that's kind of going to be our distinction between skinny fat and heart gainer. But the advice we're going to give is probably going to work for both of these populations. All right. So people may have heard of these body types, right? This ectomorph, mesomorph, and endomorph. And basically the idea is that you kind of have this genetic predisposition towards one of these body types. In other words, this is home base for you. It's not to say you can't change. I've known people who have claimed to have been all three of these in their life. So certainly you can change your body type. But classically, an ectomorph is that skinny person. That person that, like you said, they eat and eat and eat, never seem to gain any weight. That's our ectomorph. Our mesomorph are more those middle of the road people. They usually have, you know, they've got the more desirable bodies in terms of muscle composition. And then you got your endomorphs. And these are the people, Russell, like you mentioned, you know, man, I look at food and I gain weight. It's, you got that kind of that body that just seems to have that preference. So we have those three body types. And what we're going to talk about today are these ectomorphs, these hard gainers. And what I want to do today is just come up with a few tips for those of you out there that either are ectomorphs, that you know ectomorphs, and you can kind of maybe share this episode with, or maybe you fall into that skinny fat camp, right? You've got a skinny frame, but very little muscle mass on you. I think all the things we're going to talk about here today would apply to those folks as well. So, Russell, I'm going to tell you, I think you know, I've shared this a little bit with you, but I'm going to start by telling my story of my mission to put on some serious muscle last year. So a little over a year ago, we had Adam Schaefer, who is one of the co-hosts at Mind Pump On, and he was a great guest. Loved talking to him. And the subject or the title of that podcast was something like, "So you want to train like a bodybuilder," something like that, right? And it inspired me because I've never really done serious bodybuilder style training, which means eating a lot of food and lifting a lot of weights and trying to specifically to bulk up. So in the bodybuilding world, we have this concept of bulking and cutting, right? So bulking is going to be what it sounds like. You're going to eat in a calorie surplus and you're going to really try and make those excess calories build some muscle. And then when you cut, the idea is you're going to build muscle, you're going to build some fat, but then you're going to go into this cut phase, this diet phase, you're going to strip away the fat and just be left with the muscle. So that's the theory, right? And that's the gold standard for body transformation when you look at these bodybuilders. So last January, February, sometime in there, I was like, I'm going to do this. And here's what I did, Russell. I ate like a bodybuilder for, I don't know, pretty much up until Christmas last year. Yeah. I mean, I pushed my calories. At one point, I was eating in excess of 4,000 calories. In December, I was eating like 4,300 calories. And it was difficult for me to eat that much food. I was literally, are you ready for this? I literally went into the grocery store, went to the ice cream aisle, and I chose my ice cream on the calorie density. I ended up with a gelato. It was, I think, Talenti's peanut butter cup. I chose the flavor, the brand, and the fact that it was gelato, all based on calories per serving. You know why? At the end of the day, I'd eat my dinner, I'd be stuffed, and I'd be like 600 calories short of my goal, 800 calories short of my goal. But you know what? I could have, there, no matter how full you are, there's room for ice cream, right?
There always is, yeah.
So guess what happened?
I'm going to say body fat more than muscle.
Yeah, body fat more than muscle. So just for frame of reference, I should have checked my numbers here. I was 190, probably low 190s when I started this. My goal was to get to like 215, which stopped and thought about, that's a stupid goal. There's no way I was going to gain that much muscle. I got to 210 though.
Wow.
Yeah. Right before Christmas, my highest weigh-in was, I think, 209.8. Go ahead and round up and say I hit 210.
For a year? Almost a year?
Yeah. Half-ass. But let me back up. Here's where I went really, really wrong. For about 6 months, I said I was going to train like a bodybuilder, and I didn't really. I'm a hard gainer, and I'm just making excuses. I'm busy. I didn't really hit the gym that much, and I wasn't serious about my calories. And I was like, oh, crap, you know, I Now I've only got 6 months left. I need to get serious. So I got back into my Fitness Pal. I was recording everything. I was like, all right, maintenance calories about 3,500. Let's bump them up, baby. And here's the deal. And we're going to talk about this in a minute, right? About what's a realistic or good goal of weight gain for our hard gainers. But I noticed that the scale wasn't really moving. So I said, let's make things happen. I got impatient and I just dumped on the calories. But meanwhile, I stopped doing all cardio because I wanted to gain weight, right?
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, I ended up putting on way more fat than I did muscle. I put some muscle on, don't get me wrong. In December, I was stronger than I am now. Yeah. At any rate, I've been paying for it. I've been cutting basically for the last almost 2 months. So I'm down now eating around 2,400 calories right now, and which is pretty low for me. That's like 1,000 below my normal maintenance calories for me.
Wow.
And I went from 210. My weigh-in today, I think, was 193. So I've lost a lot of weight. But my fear is that basically what I did was make myself fat and unhealthy.
The push.
In the back half of last year, and then dieted down to right where I was when I started this whole freaking thing a year ago. So I like to say there are no, you know, there's no failure in health and fitness. There's learning opportunities.
Now, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Do you think it would have been different if you had some accountability?
Yes. So
yeah.
I should have had a coach. I should have just said, Russell, will you coach me through this? Is what I should have done, right?
It's funny. I bring that up. I tried to impress a coach that I've never met. Like when I first got a coach. And I was like, what do I care what this guy thinks? But I was so deep into doing the right thing for him, not for me.
Well, it's funny, you know, as coaches, you and I were joking about, you know, how different movements that we don't like. And I brought up the Bulgarian split squat. Is like,
oh, yeah.
Funny how that never ends up in my programming when I program for myself, right? It's weird. I haven't done that in a really long time. Wonder why that
it's
is.
It's really weird.
Because I don't like it, so I don't program it for myself. Yeah. Yet it's something I should do, right? Yeah. I think the same is true. You know, I'm a coach, but I probably shouldn't coach myself. And that, so yeah, that's a good point. That's another lesson learned. I should have been more patient, and I damn sure should have worked out harder. I got lazy, and I made the excuse that a lot of us do. I'm busy, man. I'm growing this business and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
All excuses. All excuses.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at any rate, I turned 60 here, and just by the time this airs, in probably just a week or two. And my goal was to roll into my 60s with a six-pack, be sub 10% body fat. So I'm getting closer to that, but I can tell you what, in January, I was not anywhere close. I'll tell you this too. I told this to one of my clients the other day. He got a good chuckle. I was sitting on the bed, so not my best posture, right? For, you know, looking swollen, jacked.
Oh, yeah.
I was sitting on my bed. I can't remember what I was. I don't know. I was probably looking at my phone or something. My wife came up, slaps me on the belly and says, "Get kind of fat there, aren't you, babe?" I was like, go ahead, just stick the dagger in my heart. Give it a twist. So anyway, that's when, just so you know, that's when I started my cut. I was like, okay, damn it.
What do you want to hear?
But here's why I wanted to talk about kind of this hard gainer, ectomorph. My childhood, I was always a skinny kid, and yeah. I could very much relate to the kid in the Charles. Remember those old Charles Atlas ads in the back of comic books where big, mean, buff kid comes and kicks sand in the skinny
on
kid's
the beach,
face?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he steals his girlfriend. You're like, damn, man, that's hard.
Yeah.
Well, I was that skinny kid. So still in the back of my mind, I'm a grown-ass man now. And I'm no longer that skinny kid. But that psychic trauma, I guess, kind of follows me around. And so I've got this kind of fear of being skinny. So I'm always kind of chasing, man, I'd like to be jacked. I'd like to be swole, right? And I think that drives a lot of people that fall into that ectomorph and hard gainer camp. You know, a lot of people, their insecurity is being fat. I don't want to be fat. And of course, now look, I've been fat. I've not been very obese, but I've certainly in my 40s at my unhealthiest, I was carrying a lot of weight. And unlike this January when I got up to 210, I was probably 210 then, but with no muscle, like none, like zero, like just all fat. So just not a healthy or a good look. But still, for me, the psychology of that is, oh man, I don't want to be skinny, right? At any rate, so Let's talk a little bit about what somebody who finds themselves in this kind of maybe self-identifies as a hard gainer. And I'm going to start here with the workouts. So if you fall into this hard gainer camp, if you identify as somebody that just has a hard time building muscle, you must do strength training. And you must do strength training in the classic sense of strength training. So I think a lot of people, you know, get caught up in, you know, they consider strength training things like classes, right? So I go to a class where we do weights as a class, and there's, you know, we get after it. They do a lot of cardio. They do maybe HIIT. They do these boot camp style things. And that's the opposite of what's going to help somebody that's in that hard gainer, skinny fat camp, right? You're probably not going to put on a decent amount of muscle doing that.
Well, it's like
Russell. I know you've got experience working with clients that have been in exactly that same boat, right? Where they're just getting after it, and going, man, why am I not putting on muscle?
It's the CrossFit's a great example, right? You got these jack dudes in CrossFit games, and you're like, well, look at them; they're doing all that.
Yeah, they are.
No, they did something else to get that jacked, and then they pursued another goal, and that was CrossFit. And the same thing with the your boot camp. You see a lot of these like hybrid athletes, and it makes it seem like they're doing all that at one shot, right? I'm running a marathon. I'm also lifting weights. I'm also doing this, and I'm jacked. Well, you know, they went down a path to get jacked, and then they went down a path to, right? So
I think
what we see in media, social media doesn't help out the
average person, right? Especially the average person in our age group, the average 50 and 60 year old. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So when we talk about strength training, we're talking about a very classic 3 to 5 days a week of 3 to 5 sets of, I guess, 3 to 15 reps of weightlifting with rest periods in between. So very classically, if you look at what bodybuilders typically do, right, it's 3 sets of 10 with a minute, 60 seconds of rest in between, and you're looking for that progressive overload. In other words, if I'm doing back squats at 200 pounds for 3 sets of 10 this week, next week I want to do 3 sets of 11, the next week I'm going to do 3 sets of 12, and then maybe the next week I want to add another 20 pounds on there and drop back down to, but we're really pushing the load there. And that rest in between sets is a really key component of building muscle, right? I think a lot of people miss that. You're like, well, that's just a waste of time in the gym, man. If I did some jumpy jacks in between my sets,
I'll
get even more jacked. And that's not the case, is it?
Yeah. No, not at all. Funny how many people think that.
Yep. And I'll say this, this is a spectrum, right? When we talk about volume, frequency, and intensity. Those are, as coaches, those are the programming variables that we use along with exercise selection, of course. And there's this bell curve of gains. And those of you that are listening, I'm making a motion of a bell curve here. But you got this bell curve, and along the bottom axis is going to be, let's just say, volume, frequency, and intensity multiplied together, right? There's this total workload. And across that top axis is going to be your results, so the gains. And the sweet spot is right in the middle of that bell curve. In other words, if you don't do enough work, you're not going to get maximum gains. But if you do too much work, you're not going to get maximum gains. You've got to find that. And for everybody, it's a little bit different, right? We all have different recovery genetics and different exercise history. So you got to find that sweet spot for you right in the middle where you're getting enough stimulus to elicit muscle growth, but you're not overtraining. Would you agree?
100%. Yes.
100%.
It's a difficult place to be in, especially when you have that mindset, push, you know, and for me, it's like, I have to back off and really back off when I back off. So it's, I have to find that fine line for myself. I enjoy the gym. And then I still have that mentality of, oh, the more I do, the better off it's going to be. And, you know, so when I do these shorter workouts, I'm like, okay, I'm going to the gym. It's going to be mobility. It's going to be something that, you know, just like, so yeah, it's like you're saying, it's something each individual person has to figure out.
Right.
Because what's too much for me might not be enough for you.
Correct. Correct. It is highly individual. And it's counterintuitive too, because I think most things in life, the harder I work, the more the rewards are, right?
So yeah.
This is a little different because not necessarily in the gym. So good point. And then keeping on the workout side of things, another tip for you hard gainers is never, ever, ever skip leg day. That's the biggest bang for your buck are those heavy squats and all the squat variations, split stance, lunges, all of those, and heavy deadlifts. That's the biggest bang for your buck for a couple of reasons. One is just muscular, right? When you do a heavy deadlift, there's not a muscle in your body that's not engaged doing that, right? So these big, heavy compound lifts, you can get really heavy. It's not just that every single muscle is involved. It's also that's sending the loudest muscle building signal there is to the central nervous system, right? If I'm doing some curls or some tricep push downs, fantastic exercises, by the way, they're not sending the same signal to the body, and those are isolation exercises. So make sure you have a good combination of those, just your basics, your heavy rows, your heavy pushes. So that'd be an overhead press or a bench press. Heavy barbell rows or dumbbell rows. Make sure you're doing lots of squats, lots of deadlifts, hip hinges, stuff of that nature. So,
When I program, I never start off with bicep curl or anything.
Right.
It's always a compound movement first.
Right. And, same.
You know, those, I just did a powerlifting one. I haven't done a curl in I don't know when, you know, a bicep curl. So it's,
powerlifters don't do a whole lot of bicep curl,
nope.
Do they?
No.
Nope. No. But they get pretty big and strong.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was to say.
Yeah, 100%. And then my last workout tip for you folks. So first is try to skip the classes. Do more classical bodybuilding style training. Don't overtrain. Be mindful of that. You want to make sure that you get the right dose. Never, ever skip leg day. And then go easy on the cardio. So basically what I'll tell folks, especially as they're ready to try something different and get serious about being on, you know, putting on some muscle, is walking is your new cardio. While you're in this phase of really trying to build muscle, you don't want to be doing a ton of HIIT. You don't want to be doing Peloton classes or other things. Let's make sure we're getting lots and lots and lots of walking. Hours is fine, but you don't want to constantly be hammering yourself with jogging, running, you know, any of the excess cardio type stuff. Would you agree to that for hard gainers?
100%. What I often find is they try to explain how non-intensive their workout is, their cardio. So I have a great example. I had one person say, well, I take spin class and that's not hard. And I said, oh, really? I said,
yeah.
So is your bike designed with a basket up front and a bell? And they looked at me oddly and I said, are you standing up on the bike? That's intensive. Like, you can't go to a spin class and just casually stroll through the thing.
Right.
So it's funny. We tend to lie about what we're doing to ourselves, you know.
100%.
Yeah. You got to back off.
Yeah. Got to go easy on that. At least, and look, There's phases in your life. There's phase, you know, we periodize training as coaches and trainers. We periodize your training. And when you're in a bulk, when you're in a muscle building phase, probably not the best time to be hammering yourself, or it's not the best time to be hammering yourself with cardio type stuff. All right, Russell, that's my tips there for workout. Anything else you could think of for folks out there that you've worked with that might fall in this camp from a workout perspective?
You know, usually most of them enjoy working out, so that's probably the hardest thing. Is pulling the reins back on.
Pulling the reins back.
Or focusing them on the goal we're trying to achieve.
That's a good point. Yep. Yeah. So folks that are...
So most of the hard gainers...
Self-identify as hard gainers, you're right. They, more often, we're pulling them back. In fact, this wasn't a client. This is just a friend who was asking for some advice. And when I said, hey, man, what do your workouts look like? He is currently tracking his calories. And he's like, yeah, I'm eating about 1,800 calories. This is a pretty big dude, not in the hard gainer camp, but somebody who's can't figure out why he's not able to lose a little fat and he's just not getting stronger, putting on any muscle, but eating 1,800 calories and doing a 6-day a week gym split where he said, yeah, I go hard. I go to failure every session. I'm like, all right, this is going to be the easiest coaching session ever. Go to 3 days a week of full body workouts, don't take any of those lifts to failure. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, eat some damn food. He's like, yeah, but I'm trying to lose this last little bit of fat. I'm like, you know what? Look, do this for a month and then go back doing this crazy extreme stuff. He's a younger dude, so he can get away with being a little more extreme here. But that going hard every day is unfortunately, and you know, a lot of people actually love that. That's, you know, gym life, right? Just not going to get
it. I love that you say it's easy coaching. I think it's the most difficult because
to get it, to get
it's almost
to go.
Like,
it's
yeah,
easy
to listen,
give, but yeah,
yeah, very easy advice
somebody
to give,
like
but
that.
Yeah, yeah, to make them do it, you're like, yeah, you got to check in on them. Hey, what are you doing?
Right. It could be tougher to get that guy or gal to pull back than it is to get somebody unmotivated to get their butt in the gym, right?
Yeah.
Two different sides, 100%. All right. Well, Russell, far and away, as you might guess, anybody listening, the biggest lever we have when it comes to these poor hard gainers just can't seem to put on mass is diet. It's nutrition. Yeah. It's being in a calorie surplus. So my advice for anybody in this camp is the same as I would tell anybody, whether you're a hard gainer or not. And that's first things first, take a week, just eat the way you normally are. Don't change anything. Track, weigh, measure all of your food for at least a week and then get that daily average. Figure out exactly how many calories a day you're eating. That's your maintenance calories, providing you're not currently like losing weight or gaining weight rapidly. I'm going to assume that your weight is relatively stable. That's your maintenance calories, right? So you take a week's worth of your calories, you take each day, you add those all together, that's your weekly calorie load, and you divide that number by 7. So that gives you your daily average. And let's just say it's 2,000, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what we know right now, if you're trying hard to gain muscle and you're not doing it, you're under eating, whatever that number is, whether that number is 1,800, 2,800, doesn't really matter. You're not eating enough food. So I would recommend, all right, let's bump that up 10 to 20%. For that first jump. So if you're eating 2,000 calories, let's bump that up to 2,400 calories, right? Seem fair, nice conservative bump. The reason we don't just ask you to eat 3,000 calories is a couple things. One, that's going to be really hard for some people to do, right? If you're a woman eating 2,000 calories trying to gain some muscle, and I say eat 3,000, that's going to be really, really tricky to do. And 100%, you're going to gain more fat than muscle by taking that big of a jump. So just that conservative bump. You're going to stay there for 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, start feeling good there, and then you're going to bump it again. So we're going to continue to bump this. And the idea is we want to move your maintenance calories from being, in our example, 2,000 to being some other higher number, right? But here's the deal. We don't build muscle out of thin air, right? We build it from building blocks. We build it from amino acids, which we get from the protein in our diet. And We need this fuel in order to these building blocks, these foundational bricks, if you will, to build this muscle. So you got to have that on board in order to build the muscle. And that's where the calorie surplus comes in. A lot of people miss that very basic fact that in order to build muscle, especially in a already conditioned person, somebody who's got a history of lifting weights, got to be in a calorie surplus, right?
Yeah. Sometimes the hardest thing to do, like you were saying earlier, it's wise to build it slowly, just like everything else. You know, like when we do a diet, we do it slowly. We don't just slash you 1,000 calories. But yeah, the tricky part is, like you said, getting in the food, you know, so you're not just adding ice cream and, you know, things, just dense food just to get in there.
You want it to be whole foods, people. Yeah, you don't want to be take it from me. You don't want to be relying on ice cream to hit your calories at the end of the night. That doesn't convert to muscle very well, unfortunately, at least in my experience.
We haven't found that to be true yet.
No, I haven't found that to be true yet. Dang it. If I can just figure out how to eat ice cream and get swollen, jacked, I'll let you know. But so far, that's been an unsuccessful experiment.
Yeah. But with my hard gainers, I do allow them more, you know.
Yes. They have
a little
more
freedom too. Yeah, more freedom. 100%.
Yep.
I don't know about you. You had to use processed foods to get you up that high, right? Like
100% I did. Yeah. So I was doing a lot of, I was trying to, you know, I was doing 200 and between 210 and 210, 220 grams of protein a day. So I was doing a minimum of 2 shakes a day. And yes, I was relying on some processed foods to get me there. Most specifically, at the end of the night, if I was close to, you know, if I was only a couple hundred, I would just eat some more starch or meat typically. But when I missed it by 600-800 calories at the end of the night, and I was like, oh man, which brings me to my next point. For hard gainers, it's critical to hit, to be consistent with your calories. So let's just say you've decided, hey, I'm eating 2,000 calories. My new calorie goal is 2,300. Unlike in a cut, where if you're, let's say you're cutting to 2,300 calories, as long as you average that over a week, you're in a calorie deficit for the week. Things will work out just fine. When you're in a calorie surplus, the math works a little bit different. You don't have the luxury of missing a day. Like say this day I got busy and I only ate 1,800 calories. That's okay. Tomorrow I'll eat, you know, 2,800 calories and it'll even out. No, it won't. You're missing that day's muscle building potential when you undereat in that day. So it's really, really important for you hard gainers to really, really dial in those calories and be really, really consistent. Don't undereat on any of those days. Think of it this way. Every day you undereat is a missed opportunity for building muscle in that day. So, but really got to be consistent. And then, of course, we can't have this conversation without, of course, we talk about protein all the time. And our protein recommendations for hard gainers is the same for anybody else. It's the same for the person that's 100 pounds overweight and wants to lose weight. It's to eat that 0.7 to 1 gram of protein per pound of ideal body weight. So for you hard gainers, that's going to be a bigger number than what you are today. And for hard gainers, probably closer to that 1 gram of protein per pound of ideal body weight.
Yeah, I find a lot. I was going to ask you, were you more higher carb or higher fat?
I was more higher carb. And now in my cuts, for me personally, I process carbs just fine, love my carbs. But that's what I cut. When I go into my cut, I cut out the carbs first. So I'm very close to keto carnivore right now because I'm not eating very many carbs. And I still feel pretty good. I don't feel great in the gym. I feel weak in the gym. In fact, I'm going to tell you this embarrassing story, Russell, right now.
Were you using the pink weights?
Dude, almost. So I'm a member in a couple different gyms, right? I've got this big, fancy, amazing one, but it's far away. And then there's this little hole in the wall one here, kind of a little closer to me because, again, I'm out here in the boondocks. And the little tiny one in the strip mall has got some incredibly strong people in there. And when I go in, there's these two gals that are in there, ladies, women, they're young women. I have crappy ages, but I would guess they're not 30 yet. They're probably in their 20s. And they are fabulously, fabulously fit. One of them I know is a bodybuilding competitor. I'm not sure about if the other one is. But they're both really strong. I was getting ready to go over and do my dumbbell shoulder presses. And the dumbbells that I was going to use were currently in use by one of those ladies. She was over there freaking repping out dumbbell shoulder presses, the same exercise I was getting ready to do with the same weight I was getting ready to do. I thought to myself, well, holy moly, I'm going to go do a different exercise because there's no way I can wait for her to put those down, walk up right behind her, grab the exact same weight and start doing them. Oh man, it was just a little demoralizing. Now, I could say she's a short thing, right? She's got smaller levers. I'm 6'2". I got these big, long ape arms, and that's a piss poor excuse, man. Nah, she was using the same weight that I was.
What's hilarious about that? So I've been in the same position, right? Where I have a different goal, right? So my goal wasn't to throw on massive weights, and right now I'm doing something that's basically mostly body weight movement. So I had the same thing. I was working on my little shoulder rehab type thing. So I was in the gym, and of course I picked up the lightest dumbbell, and I'm doing this thing, and I'm struggling because it hurts because it's all tight.
Yeah. Shoulder rehab. Yeah.
And of course, there's this girl that's tiny and petite next to me, and she's throwing on the plates from the squat rack, and she's just repping them through. And I'm like, God, this is so embarrassing because I'm making more noise than she is.
and then
it got to be, and I thought to myself, no one cares what I'm doing. I'd like to think everyone thinks they're looking at me, but they probably didn't even know I was there.
The struggle is real. You know, and look, for people that have gym intimidation, Look, it is what it is. Russell's right that nobody cares. And even if they did, what does it possibly matter? I just thought that was funny. But at any rate,
it is.
Yeah. So hard gainers, don't miss that new calorie goal. Get your protein in, drink your calories. Another thing that worked for me.
Yeah.
So I was making these smoothies. I was putting Greek yogurt, just whole fat Greek yogurt in there. Of course, protein powder. I'd throw some berries in there. I'd throw oatmeal or nut butter in there, make it really calorie dense. For me, that's a good way to get down some of those extra calories. And the last thing I'll say for the diet side is to be patient. Certainly, that's one of the areas I fell down. When I was telling you my story about last year. I was at scale, wasn't budging. Damn it. I'll show that scale what's up. And I just ate like a pig. And of course, that didn't end well. But what you're really looking for, and Russell, I'd love to hear your take on this, but what I think an ideal amount of weight gain for, especially a hard gainer, when they're in a muscle building phase, it's a pound a month. And that's a tiny amount of weight, right? Maybe a pound and a half. And again, I'm talking about somebody who's resistance trained. If you are just starting out, if you're skinny fat, for example, you may well exceed that. But for somebody who's been training for a couple of years, a pound a month, so a quarter pound a week is a sad amount of weight when it comes to, I want gains now. I don't want them 2 years from now. Come on, let's pack it on. But as soon as you, in my experience with myself and with clients as well, as soon as we start to exceed that kind of that pound a month, pound and a half a month threshold, certainly we get to 2 pounds and more a month, we're seeing more fat come on, which, look, a lot of bodybuilders, that's their MO, right? They dirty bulk. They just eat it all. They don't care. Look, I'll get up to 30% body fat. I don't care because I got the discipline to strip it all away.
Yeah.
A, they're younger. B, they're probably on gear, meaning they're taking drugs. And C, that's very, very unhealthy. They're doing that for an extreme aesthetic, not for longevity and health and to be healthy people. But has it been your experience working with hard gainers that slower is better when it comes to the weight gain?
Yeah, definitely. I'm the one, like you, one to three.
That's one to
my
three?
Wheelhouse.
All right. You're going to coach me on my next bulk then, because I like that three number better than one. Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard. Like you said, 1 pound a month is like, that's why I say
it's demoralizing.
The these are the hardest people, because usually we all look at the scale for progress, which I think talked about many times.
Right. Yes.
Idea either, but at least gives us a little like motivation, a little boost. Yeah. But I was my bulk this winter, and I'm of the opposite. So I'm the, look at food and I gain weight. So I have a real hard time bulking mentally. So I was averaging 2 to 3 pounds a month, and that's where I was. But what's funny is, of course, the scale looking the way it did, of course, I just want to add muscle and magically not put on weight, right? That's going to happen.
Me too.
And then, but, you do have to do things like you do when you lose weight too. You have to say, all right, my pants are still fitting. There's going to be, those are all indicators like that you're putting on muscle. You're progressing in the gym. Your pants are, they're going to be slightly tighter because you are filling out, but not like, to the point where we're putting on all fat, so.
Yeah, dude, I'll tell you what, I thank goodness for stretchy jeans these days. I guess all jeans have some stretch in them, because right around the new year, I was taxing mine, that's for sure.
I knew where my bulk was going good because I went to the Mind Pump event. They had a Christmas party in December.
That's right.
And I had to bring a suit. Thank the Lord I tried the suit on, because I had several suits. Those tops were... I knew the bulk was going good because the pants fit well, but the tops were just...
My man, just ripping out of there, huh?
I had to get one where I was a little heavier. I was like, oh, I was heavier here. Let me put that one on.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
But I would have gone to Mind Pump thing looking slightly ridiculous.
Yeah, right on. All right. Well, as we're wrapping up here, my last piece of advice for hard gainers is this. And I'll tell this to anybody, but for you hard gainers, this is critical, and it's sleep. Get your sleep. You're literally building your muscle in your sleep. You're not building muscle in the gym. You're actually breaking down muscle in the gym. You're not building it when you eat. You're refueling then. You are building your muscle specifically in those deep phases of sleep. So those healthy phases of restorative sleep, you're not going to have success putting on muscle as a hard gainer, really anybody else, but specifically if you identify as a hard gainer, you're really shooting yourself in the foot if you're not getting that healthy 7-8+ hours of healthy sleep every single night. So I think that in terms of our advice for hard gainers, I'm going to leave it there. That's my last piece of advice is folks got to get the sleep for so many reasons, but specifically in what we're talking about here, the subject of today, for that muscle building, get absolutely critical.
Yeah. Isn't it funny, though? It's the same principles as losing weight, as gaining weight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Eat the nutrition you're supposed to be eating.
Right.
Get the sleep.
Right.
Have a goal. Like, have your workouts meet your goal. I mean, right. The same thing, right?
Same
principles.
Anybody listening to this, and especially for you folks out there that are in Camp Russell, right? You're like, oh, I hate these skinny fat people. Who are these people? Right? Everything we said here really applies. For the most part, applies to you as well. I mean, this is the same advice to your point, Russell, that we would give anybody trying to be a healthy, fit, functional 56-year-old, right?
Yes.
100%. All right, Russell, man, I love having these conversations with you. Let's do this. Let's invite folks to continue the conversation with us. And folks, if you would like to continue this conversation, I'd love to hear from you, especially if you're a hard gainer. Or if you're somebody who thinks that hard gainers are obnoxious, let's hear from you too. You guys can sound off over in our private Facebook group. That's the Over 50 Lean Body Blueprint. I will put links to that into the show notes there. You have access to myself, of course, Coach Russell here. Our other coaches are in there. Great community, growing community, thriving community. Love to have you in there. And would really love to continue this conversation about hard gainers. So, Russell, until next time, I'm just going to sign off. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Yeah. Okay, that's our show for today, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast, I want to let you know that we have other free resources over at silveredgefree.com. There, you'll find our free guides with our top tips on nutrition, exercise, and healthy lifestyle to assist you in your weight loss and fitness journey. So feel free to head over there and download anything that looks useful to you. I'll put links to everything we talked about in the show notes, and you folks can find those over at silveredgefitness.com/277. As we wrap up our time together today, you can show your support for this show in two important ways. First is to tell a friend about this podcast and encourage them to give it a listen. The second is for you YouTube folks to click the like and subscribe buttons, and for you podcast folks to please give this podcast a 5-star review on whatever platform you listen to podcasts on, and be sure to subscribe and follow so you don't miss future episodes. I really appreciate you spending your time with me today, and until next time, stay strong.